Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of SLMA Radio. Brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. Today, as always, we're privileged to have with us the executive director, the founder, the man behind the SLMA, the one and only, the amazing Jim Obermeyer. Hey, Jim.
Thank you, Paul Roberts. Paul Roberts is our announcer on all things in the Funnel Radio channel. Our subject today is who owns the pipeline, marketing or sales? Traditionally, the pipeline has been called the sales pipeline. It has been owned by salespeople. But is this a true statement today? With the advent of new marketing automation capabilities, artificial intelligence applications, marketing seems to be relentlessly inserting itself deeper into the pipeline at almost every level. The answer to this question will guide both marketing and sales to better understand their role in the pipeline management. To answer this question, we've gone to Chris Ryan, the marketer's expert on pipeline ownership. He's written four books, got 25 years of experience, technology, senior management experience, widely known expert in B2B marketing, lead to revenue modeling, sales strategy, and business startups. So as both a service provider and in-house marketing executive, Chris has written four books on marketing and information technology. I go to Chris to talk about a lot of these things. And today it's who owns the pipeline? Chris, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So do you have any opinions on this, Chris?
You bet I do. And my opinions are formed not only from a lot of experience on the client side, where I was the in-house marketing executive responsible for pipeline management, but also as a marketing consultant for the last 8+ years, where we deal with companies that have a lot of different models. So I definitely have opinions on who should own what parts of the pipeline. But a lot of it's going to be depend on a particular business model and what you're selling and who you're selling it to.
Well, let's take the software, the high technology areas. There's been a lot of discussion from various sources that say that the inquirer doesn't get the salespeople involved until they're 70% done with the evaluation and everything, which leads you to believe, well, where did they get that information from? They must have gotten it from marketing, from the website, from the collateral material, and maybe from a lot of the content they've been picking it up. So does that mean that marketing owns 70% of the pipeline? Or is it just a sales forecast we're talking that's different?
So the way I break it down is slightly differently. I think that marketing, you know, here's the general statement, and then we can talk about particulars in as much detail as you want. But as particularly if you're selling in a situation where you have an enterprise sales force, where the actual deal is taken by an individual who is quote unquote closing the sale, it is very unlike selling software online or selling like through a free trial model or something like that. In that case, in my opinion and experience, marketing owns every part of the pipeline up until a lead becomes something we call a marketing qualified lead. That means the awareness stages, you know, the outbound stages, the inbound inquiries, and then the lead nurture and qualification until you create a marketing qualified lead. And then that lead is handed off. And once it's handed off, when sales accepts it, we call that a sales qualified lead. Some people call it a sales accepted lead. From that point on, they own everything up to the close of the deal. Now, marketing may still have an impact, like you talked about. A lot is done by marketing in terms of, let's say, inviting that prospect to webinars, providing sales material, all kinds of sales enablement tools, and so forth. But from an ownership standpoint, that's where the handoff goes. So they both own the pipeline, just different parts of it.
So the reality with marketing today is we've always known marketing automation is not new. It's been out there 15, 18 years. It's gotten really popular and it's probably approaching a 50%, 60% of the companies. Would you agree today they're about 50%?
Yes.
And yes. So therefore, when you've got the capability, when you have that capability, you're more likely to use it, which means you're going to say, well, what can I do for you at each step of this way? If you do the demo, can I help you in the demo? If you do the final decision, the meetings, can I do your Can I do your PowerPoints for you? Suddenly marketing is saying, I want to deliver all these things for you. And it goes all the way down through the pipeline. So right. I guess there's a difference between co-ownership and actual ownership. The salespeople certainly, once it's an MQL, they own the outcome.
Yeah, so. And as a matter of fact, that's a good point because I don't like the term co-ownership. I would say, you know, we use the term lead to revenue to describe everything that happens from when a person or a company becomes aware of you until they become your customer. Everything that happens is part of an end-to-end lead to revenue process. But the handoff is a handoff where, you know, there's an old expression, one throat to choke. If something isn't happening within the sales part of the pipeline, that's not the marketing issue. And if leads aren't properly qualified, that's not the salesperson's or the sales department's issue. So they're identified, even though you do co-own the results and so forth, and that's what you want, right? Results-oriented marketing, but you have to have identified owners. It works much better that way. And that's one of our guiding principles. Now, who owns what number at what point?
Let's step back for a second. I think this is appropriate at this moment to tell people about Fusion Marketing Partners, and then from that, they're going to have a better understanding why you have the opinions you have. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, Fusion Marketing Partners, yeah, I spent a lot of years on the B2B side in the technology industry working for some very large and successful companies, and I built these end-to-end, these lead-to-revenue processes, although we weren't calling it then, that at that point. And so I really got to understand how things move through the entire funnel steps to get to a closed business and how to facilitate each one of those. And that's what we do at Fusion Marketing Partners. We don't close business. Typically that happens on the client side, but we do a lot of the necessary steps and help companies do their lead to revenue models to make sure they're as efficient as possible. Because that's really what's important, Jim, is that you spend the least amount of money to get the most qualified prospects into the sales funnel and then close them and then turn them into happy repeat customers. That's in essence what we're all trying to do. There are a lot of different ways to go about it. We have methods that have worked very well for different types of models.
What percentage of the inquiries that come into the systems of your clients, I know this is a general question, but what percentage do you think are marketing qualified leads? Out of 100 that are raw inquiries, what eventually gets a marketing qualified lead?
Well, the number that I use, it's a blended number from a lot of different clients, but it's around 10% that we would call A leads that are short-term, very short-term, or B leads, which are fairly short-term. Let's say an A lead, and again, this is situational, but say an A lead, you expect that it could close within 3 months, and a B lead within 6 months. Those are leads that you want to quickly get into the sales process. So that would be about 10%. So out of the 100, let's say 10 of those end up being workable at this time. And a key determinant, and if I have to say one about what companies do well versus not so well, it's that ability not to work the 10%, but to take that 90% and get value out of that 90% by nurturing those leads, continue to do so. Here's a statistic for you that I've seen, again, through dozens of client engagements. If you are able to move 10 into the sales funnel at this point, in other words, they end up being worked by sales reps because they're qualified today, out of the 90 that are not, you will find over time, another 10 or so will become qualified sales leads in the future. So the pool isn't really 100. So if you look at it like 100, 10 are good and qualified. That doesn't mean the 90 aren't good. It means that some of them are going to take some more nurturing, and about 10 of those will turn out to be good potential customers at some point.
I personally think that number is higher, but you know that's my background is a little different. And another 25 or 30% will become marketing qualified to an extent. But regardless, we know that more 10% are hot leads or MQLs. Yeah. And there is more in the pipeline, and it should be nurtured. Now, does that also mean that the marketing department runs a telemarketing operation to qualify those? Should marketing be in charge of that?
You know, that's almost a religious question, because I hear this argued all the time. And by the way, I've seen companies bounce that function back and forth from reporting and marketing to reporting to sales. And the difference is a lot of times is that sales is looking to do everything they can to get as much business as it possibly can today. So they turn those lead qualification people become almost what you'd call an inside sales rep as opposed to a business development rep. Now, that's a subtle distinction, but if the marketing owns it, what the job of the marketing qualification department would be is to make sure you get the value out of that 90, not to close the 10 or whatever that are, you know, going into the sales. You hand those off to sales, and now your job is to qualify all of the inbound traffic, all the new inquiries, and periodically go back and contact the ones that were in the future pool, right?
Right.
The ones that aren't obviously disqualified, the numbers we were talking about before. That's how you really build up a machine. But when you keep jumping back from having your inside telephone people, today they're just doing qualification, and next month they're trying to close deals or move things further into the sales, it just gets very confusing. It's pretty inefficient because then you let a bunch of other stuff go. You know, there's an opportunity cost. Everything you're working on means there's something else you're not working on. My thing is let sales do what they do really well, which is close deals, and let marketing do what they do, which is to find potential future purchasers and nurture them until it's ready for the handoff. That would be the essence of the ownership question.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chris. My experience is if you've got 10 people in a qualification department and their job is to qualify and to build relationships and to qualify these people to see where they are in the cycle and then get salespeople involved to answer questions and what have you. If you turn that into a inside sales department, 80% of the people that are sitting there today will leave because they're not salespeople.
Right.
They're relationship building people and they're not there to have a quota. And they will leave.
Yes.
One or two out of the 10 will stay, and the rest will be gone. And then they'll turn around and change all those people back into a marketing qualified department. And 60% of the people will stay, and the rest of them will leave because they want to really be salespeople. So,
yeah, I would agree. In fact, I would guess that of the sales development reps, in other words, the ones that work for the, you call them BDRs or SDRs, that work for the marketing department, maybe a quarter of them at most would be good inside salespeople. And those you do, because once they find out there's more money to be made by actually closing the deal, they want to move over there anyway. But the rest, you know, I had a team, I work for Stellan, which is one of the largest enterprise content management companies in the world. It's now owned by part of Oracle. But we had a great team of business development reps, and we could predict their almost to the lead. It was amazingly accurate because you had a great team. They knew what they were good at. They knew exactly how to get to their number. And the salespeople loved it because they were working. They were getting more value out of the time they spent because they were dealing only with people that were qualified. And how do we know this? So one of the statistics, another one, you know, downstream a little bit. So if you say those 10 that you throw over the fence to the sales, and sales works them, we expect about half of those to become sales qualified leads. So a lot of times what is a marketing qualified lead upon further qualification falls out of the system and goes back for re-nurture, which is fine. That's not a bad statistic and it can work. And when a sales rep knows that out of every 10 leads that the marketing department sends to them, 5 of those are going to end up in the sales pipeline, they get pretty excited. They're not
definitely forecast, part of the forecast.
Yeah, they're having quality conversations. They're making their numbers. And that's exactly the way we did it at Stellan and the way I've done it, you know, for a lot of other companies, mostly clients since then. That's the system.
Okay, Chris, I've got a what if. We've been speaking to Christopher Ryan, founder and CEO of Fusion Marketing Partners. He's been answering the question. Let's say that I'm a sales manager and I've been getting too many inquiries in and the salespeople haven't been following them up. And marketing is putting some nasty statistics out, making me look like an idiot. And I finally say, well, how do I get marketing qualified leads? How do I get these marketing people to do this? What advice would you give the sales manager?
Well, first of all, the sales manager is not working with a very good marketing manager in that case. Because what the sales manager should have with the marketing team is what we call a service level agreement, where they sit down and scope out exactly what sales needs in terms of marketing qualified leads, which turn into sales qualified leads, which turn into opportunities, which turn into closed business and so forth to make their number. If they don't have that, they need to go back and specify that. Now what marketing has to do is give them leads. Remember I said earlier, Jim, that 50% of the marketing qualified leads should end up in a sales pipeline, not in the forecast, but at least in the sales pipeline. If that number is much lower than that, let's say 25% or 10% or something like that, that means that marketing department is throwing stuff to sales that is not good quality. So there's always a blend. You know, you've got to blend the quantity versus the quality. You also don't want sales reps sitting around with nothing to do because everything is held up in the marketing part of the assembly line. And I think of it as an assembly line. I've got to keep the flow moving from inquiry to marketing qualified lead to sales qualified lead to opportunity to pipeline to forecast to close a business. And if all those numbers are set up, you don't always project it correctly. You set up these sales level agreements. And if you're partnered, your marketing guy and your salesperson, they're all, you know, in sync. If you don't make the numbers, you're going to go adjust until everybody wins. That's the point. We all win when the numbers are made, and we all lose when they're not. So that scenario that you're talking about, it's just, in my opinion, not very good management.
Okay. Makes great sense. Chris, I think you've answered our question today. Who owns the pipeline, marketing or sales? You've given us some good indication of the responsibilities on both sales and marketing. If you can do me a favor, would you be so kind as to come back in a couple of weeks and take another 10 or 15 minutes to talk about service level agreements? What is a service level agreement between sales and marketing? Who should participate? How should it start? And what elements should be on it? Can you do that?
I'll absolutely love to talk about it. Excellent. To share with your audience.
Chris, tell the people how they can reach you.
They can go to our website. There's lots and lots of stuff. We blog about this. We do white papers about this. Got a lot of good information, case studies. FusionMarketingPartners.com. If you want to reach me, the best way, just send an email to cryan, C-R-Y-A-N, at FusionMarketingPartners.com. And I'm happy to have conversations or help any way I can.
Thank you very much, Chris Ryan, founder and president, CEO of Fusion Marketing Partners and a supporter of the SLMA. Paul, over to you.
Once again, you've been listening to another episode of the SLMA Radio, brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. One of the many radio shows on the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.